Good afternoon and welcome to the study for April 18th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 15:38 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again for our study. Once again, we should begin, I think, with our proverb for today, little children, and it is from Proverbs 15, verses 19 and 20 in the Ward Green version, which reads, "The path of the sluggard is thorny and grown. The way of the upright is plainly made known. A son who is cheering his father is wise, but stupid is one to his mother despise." That is the proverb for today from Proverbs 15, 19, and 20. We've been studying the article, The Crucible of Credible Creed, and I've done a lot of research in the past 24 hours regarding the Hittite kingdom, and I've learned that in the commentary to Table 4 of Chapter 10, Paragraph 3 of Part 2 of The Crucible of Credible Creed by yours truly, the reference there to the four generations of the Hittite kings, which averaged 35, by investigation, there was only one of them who could have been a firstborn son, actually. The others, one of them was a fourth son, the fourth son, and one of them was the third son, and one of them was the second son, at best. So we have many sons that were not firstborn here of these four. That's why the average is 35. For one reason, but the other reason, again, as we already mentioned, was that the age of the first king could have been greater, because these are not birth dates. These are not the years of birth. These are the years of the beginning of the reign of each king. So if the kings had a different age at the beginning of their reign, then, for example, if the first one were younger, then the time of the equivalent age for the last one would shorten this number 35 to a smaller number also. So we've got lots of ways of seeing how the average generation for the Hittite kings is perfectly great in our chronology. That's not the only thing we checked, and not the only thing I checked, because I checked all of these things when I wrote the article. But I've done a little more detail maybe now, but because I had more time. And I will be doing more research all the time, but one of the important things that I want to mention before we go too far in our research is when you do a Google search of the Hittite king for our website, willofjehovah.com, site:willofjehovah.com, space, quote, Mercili the Second, space, end quote, you find the second written in Roman numerals, you find that we mentioned Mercili the Second in a lot of different articles, including Wild Road, Ahead to History. And these are, in all of these cases, I should say, the reference to Mercili is important chronologically because it synchronizes the Hittite kingdom with the Egyptian kingdom in the reign of Pharaoh Horemheb, during the reign of Horemheb, who reigned, well, just outside the Amarna period, I guess we could say, you know, lower than that, from the time of the ninth year of Mercili at the very earliest. And that this is what has been written about by another scholar with whom we have no connection, whose name is Jared Miller, and his work we quote. When you do this search, you find that we mention it in Preservation, the Crucible of Credible Creed. We mention Mercili in the Crucible. We don't talk about the synchronism to Horemheb in this article, Crucible, but in B4 chronology, we mention it. The fact that there was an important synchronism also during the time of Supaluliuma the First, when Nefertiti wrote a letter to him, and it's been wrongly identified as the wife or the widow of Tut, instead of Nefertiti, the widow of Akhenaten. But it couldn't have been the widow of Tut, because we already know from the dating, at least not in the best synchronism, not in the best chronology, which includes the eclipse of Mursili in 1340 BCE, according to Peter Huber, which I also would like to show here, if we can find it. Where is it? Here it is. I rebooted because I needed to get my audio working. When I rebooted, I lost this momentarily, but here it is. In Peter Huber's abstract, we noted the other day also that he describes this important year one of Ramesses II as, quote, the most convincing astronomical chronology. The most convincing astronomical chronology. Ramesses II, 1315. So we use that one aspect or one fact, one conclusion of Peter Huber in that one article that he wrote, that he wrote so much about the Hittite Empire. Also, apparently, because in the abstract he mentioned, and we don't have the copy of the article, but it doesn't really matter what the content of the article is, since we know his conclusion. And he says this 1315 date is favored by the Amarna Hittite synchronisms and the solar eclipse in the time of Mursili II, which he dates, we know, to 1340 BCE, as we already mentioned. So that was year 10 of Mursili. So therefore, year 1 of Mursili was 1350. Therefore, year 1 of Supaluliuma the First, his predecessor, was 1377, with a 27-year reign for Supaluliuma the First. And even that will be, well, we know that that has to be synchronized. You know, that the reign of Supaluliuma, his death in 1350, is synchronized, that he has to live long enough so that the reign of Horemheb has to align with the year 9 or later of Mursili the Second, and also there are just many, many things going on here that are considered. And Juan Antonio, is it Juan Antonio? I'm trying to think of his name. Is it Juan Antonio Belmonte? It's Belmonte who wrote this article, DNA, Wine, and Eclipses, which explains all this. And Jared Miller also wrote the article about Mursili's year compared to Horemheb's and so on. But it's all talked about. We talk about Juan Antonio Belmonte in our articles also. And his article is extremely useful in explaining the Egyptian chronology relative to the Hittite chronology. So we can't cover it all, obviously, but in one day we certainly can't. But it's interesting that we've I've been very thorough in all of this. It's the only chronology that actually does work with all the synchronisms. No other chronology, nobody else has the knowledge broad enough. They have specialists, but they don't. Nobody else considers a broad enough sphere or width of knowledge, a broad enough spectrum of knowledge, to be able to account for all of the different necessary synchronisms to make everything fit so that there actually can be a chronology. So none of the conventional chronologies are really chronologies at all. They're just bits and pieces, and we have to find, which we did, the crucible chronology, which we found. So, and regarding the Kuduru of the Babylonian king Marduk-Nadin-Ahi in paragraph 10.5 of the Crucible article now, we said the best, or any the only stronger evidence that we could find for this Kuduru in the year 10 of Marduk Nadinahi, because the overlap of his reign was perfect to indicate a year 1322 or what for his year 10, right? Was it? Well, it even says right in the inscription of the Kuduru here, we can read it, during the victory, it says, line 5, in which he defeated Assyria. Upon his servants, he looked with favor, and, you know, he gave, it says, he said he a land, okay, a piece of land for his servant. He measured and presented it to him forever. Lines 30, or 13 through 30, and also line 12. You know, all just read it if you want to see what's being said there, but it's rather lengthy. But anyway, it's explaining that he gave a gift in his 10th year. And it's dated the 10th year of King Marduk Nadinahi of Babylon. So we found that that was aligned perfectly with what Sennacherib wrote. Now, Sennacherib wrote that he brought back the gods or idols that were stolen by this king of Akkad called Marduk Nadinahi in the time of Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, in the Babylonian inscription. We already talked about that. And that thing that he said, the specific thing that Sennacherib wrote, was that 418 years had passed. So when we took that, okay, this is early in his reign. That Sennacherib conquered Babylon, right? And that's when he brought back the idol gods. So we can add from the beginning of the reign of Sennacherib, which was 704, and that doesn't have to be the same as the year that he invaded Judah, which is 711, the 14th year of Hezekiah, because once a king becomes king later in his life, he's then referred to as king even during the time before he was king, when Sennacherib was apparently only the military commander. The Bible still referred to him as the king of Assyria, and we know he later became king in 704. There's no problem. We're not trying to change the year one of Sennacherib, which was for a while a problem. If you're trying to make everything simple, it can be a problem, but this is the way the world works. It's not always that simple. So Sennacherib was the leader of the military in 711, just like Taharqa. There's a similar thing happened in the time of the Egyptian king Taharqa. This is the Assyrian king Sennacherib. But Taharqa was involved in a military exploit before he became king, you know. So, and he's referred to in the Bible also. And we never know if it's the same person being referred to, or if there are two people of the same name, too. That's another thing. But 704 plus 418 equals 1122 BCE. And that's the amazing thing, that is year 10 of Marduk Nadinahi. Nadinahi, right, Nadinahi. Marduk Nadinahi, his year 10 was exactly 1122, which was, you know, based on his year 1 of 1131, which we found in our chronology lines up perfectly with the year of Sennacherib, 704, his year 1, or his accession, his at least his conquest of Babylon, right? That's his conquest of Babylon. And it's early in his reign he conquered Babylon. But the 418 added to 704 gives 1122, and that's the proof that our chronology is exactly correct if the 704 for Sennacherib is correct, which many people believe it is, very close to that. So it's incredibly perfect, because we found it was year 10. So, and then we came down and we found this We look for, well, we need to give a quote here. Here, as to the rains which have been so scanty, it is a good omen. This is from paragraph 10.6, or 10.5, I should say, of the Crucible article. In a report by E.A. Musilam to his lord Marduk Nadin-Ahi, it is written, quote, if a sign occurs in the sky that cannot be cancelled, and if it happens to you that rains become scanty, make the king undertake a campaign against the enemy, he will be victorious. That was written much later than this king, Marduk Nadin-Ahi. It was a quote by a later king of Assyria from the letters from Assyrian scholars to the kings Esarhaddon and Ashurbanipal, who were much later kings. We know Esarhaddon succeeded or came after Sennacherib. And Ashurbanipal came after Esarhaddon at some point after Esarhaddon. So these important, but they were significant kings, Esarhaddon and Ashurbanipal. They quoted from this earlier time period of Marduk Nadin-Ahi, who was also a king. He was a king, wait a minute, to his lord Marduk Nadin-Ahi. So Marduk Nadin-Ahi, right. He had to take back those things that had been captured. So these kings on the right of the column are Assyrian kings, right? And 1131, Marduk Nadin-Ahi was a Babylonian king. But these gods were stolen from the time of Tiglath-Pileser the First, 1161 to 1122. And there we see that was during the time of the tenth year of Marduk Nadin-Ahi, 1122, which we just talked about. Everything is perfectly in alignment. It's just there's a lot of things that we're talking about all at once here. It can get confusing if we're not careful. But this quote was from Marduk Nadin-Ahi, the Babylonian king, right? Letters from Assyrian scholars to the kings. So this quote had to do with the Babylonians, even though it's in the letters from the Assyrian scholars, curiously. But that's from 1983, first edition of that document. The Kuduru gives the circumstances of the present of land as the very time of victory against Assyria, a year which we've arrived at by two methods as 1122 BCE. In other words, we arrived at it through our chronology, the 10th year of Marduk Nadin-Ahi, who wrote about the victory in his 10th year. And we've also arrived at it using Sennacherib's records, where he wrote 418 years, right, from the time he brought the gods or idols back. What eclipse is there to be found over Babylon at the time prior to this, if not the total one, May 18th, 1124? I rebooted, and that's why this is not sized correctly. There it is. Now it's sized correctly, and we see there's the eclipse over Babylon exactly passing through Babylon, May 18th, 1124 BCE, 2 years before that gift of land. So the 2 years is ample time. The scantiness of the rains coming after the total eclipse in paragraph 10.7 now of the sun allows for some time after the solar eclipse of Babylon before the military campaign could be carried out. We have a span of 2 years and several months from solar eclipse to the Kuduru made during the victory, in quotes, during the victory. So, in which also Babylon's king Marduk Nadin-Ahi had defeated Assyria, with his name in quotes and also the words defeated Assyria in quotes as part of that document. It was a completely total solar eclipse seen from Babylon. If that wouldn't be an omen, what would, right? So, we haven't got time to finish this now, this paragraph 7, but because we want to move on and read some other things. At Ezra chapter 4, when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the sons of the exile were building a temple to Yahweh, the God of Israel, they immediately approached Zerubbabel and the heads of the paternal houses and said to them, let us build along with you. For just like you, we search for your God, and to him we are sacrificing since the days of Esarhaddon, the king of Assyria, who brought us up here. However, Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the heads of the paternal houses of Israel said to them, you have nothing to do with us in building a house to our God. And really, literally, it says, nothing to you and to us in building a house to our God. For we ourselves shall together build to Yahweh, the God of Israel, just as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us. At that, the people of the land were continually weakening the hands of the people of Judah and disheartening them from building and hiring counselors against them to frustrate their counsel all the days of Cyrus, the king of Persia, down to the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. These are the great kings, Cyrus the Great, you know, Darius the Great. Makes sense that they would be mentioned if these were the major kings, Darius, the one called the Great, and Cyrus the Great, king of Persia. And in the reign of Ahasuerus, at the start of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. People sometimes identify Ahasuerus as the son of Cyrus, who was called Cambyses. But we don't know. I mean, these names Ahasuerus and Darius are just the titles given to these kings, or they're not necessarily their personal names. Also, in the days of Artaxerxes, in verse 7, Bishlam, Mithridath, Tabiel, and the rest of his colleagues wrote to Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, and the writing of the letter was written in Aramaic characters and translated into the Aramaic language. Rehum, the chief government official, and Shimshai, the scribe, wrote a letter against Jerusalem to Artaxerxes the king as follows. Then Rehum, the chief government official, and Shimshai, the scribe, and the rest of their colleagues, the judges and the lesser governors across the river, the secretaries, the people of Erech, the Babylonians, the inhabitants of Susa, that is, the Elamites, and the rest of the nations whom the great and honorable Asenapper took into exile and settled in the cities of Samaria, and the rest beyond the river. And now this is a copy of the letter that they sent concerning it. Quote, to Artaxerxes the king, your servants, the men beyond the river, and now let it become known to the king that the Jews who came up here from you to us have come to Jerusalem. They are building the rebellious and bad city, and they proceed to finish the walls and to repair the foundations. Now let it become known to the king that if this city should be rebuilt and its walls be finished, neither tax nor tribute nor toll, will they give. They won't pay anything, in other words, and it will cause loss to the treasuries of the king. Now, inasmuch as we do eat the salt of the palace, and it is not proper for us to see the denuding of the king, on this account we have sent and made it known to the king that there may be an investigation of the book of records of your ancestors. Then you will find in the book of records and learn that that city is the city rebellious and causing loss to kings and jurisdictional districts, and within it there were movers of revolt from the days of old. For this reason, that city has been laid waste. The date of it being laid waste we've established as 587 BCE. We are making known to the king that if that city should be rebuilt and its walls be refinished, this letter apparently being around the year 522 BCE, you also will certainly have no share beyond the river. So this is some 55 years after the destruction of Jerusalem when this was written. The king sent word to Rehum, the chief government official, and Shimshai the scribe, and the rest of their colleagues who were dwelling in Samaria, and the rest beyond the river. And this is what the king wrote, greetings. And now the official document that you have sent us has been distinctly read before me. So an order has been put through by me, and they have investigated and found that city, that that city has from the days of old been one rising up against kings, and one in which rebellion and revolt have been carried on, and there proved to be strong kings over Jerusalem and governing all beyond the river, and tax, tribute, and toll were being given to them. In other words, Jerusalem collected tax, is what he's saying. Now put an order through for these able-bodied men to stop that that city may not be rebuilt until the order is put through by me. So be careful that there may be no negligence about acting in this regard, that the harm may not increase to the injury of kings. End quote. Now after the copy of the official document of Artaxerxes the king had been read before Rehum and Shimshai the scribe and their colleagues, they went in a hurry to Jerusalem to the Jews and stopped them by force of arms. It was then that the work on the house of God, which was in Jerusalem, stopped. And it continued stopped until the second year of the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. So from this we arrive at the idea, since the fourth year of Darius was also determined as 70 years after the destruction of the temple, from what we read in Zechariah 7 yesterday, then, and this second year of Darius was also mentioned in that book of Zechariah, we know that this is Darius who reigned from 521 BCE, Darius Hystaspes, he's called, the famous Darius the Great. So therefore, this other king mentioned as reigning prior to that, who was called Artaxerxes here, was some other king who reigned for a short period of time, evidently, because Cyrus reigned until about 529, I think, and then Cambyses almost all of the time until Darius. So this other Artaxerxes, unless he was Cambyses, who was mentioned by two different names possibly in this chapter, or two different titles, Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes. One could have been a title and one could have been a name, but it also could have been one of the kings. There was a short rulership of one king in between Cambyses and Darius. It could have been him, but you know, it's very difficult to say, but exactly what happened there in that particular, with regard to those details, namely the identity of that king, Artaxerxes. And the word of Jehovah of armies continued to occur, Zechariah chapter 8, saying, now this is year 4 of Darius, according to the previous chapter. This is 518 BCE. Ezra was writing at the earlier time when the work was stopped, right? And it continued stopped until the time of Darius. Now, and this is what, that's right, so this is what we just read in Ezra was from somewhere around the, you know, very soon after the Jews had returned in 538 BCE to rebuild the temple, and they didn't get very far. In the second year we read it mentioned something about that, and we haven't really seen any other mention of what time frame it is. So that would be about 537 that was. This is about 518 BCE, and this is what Jehovah of armies has said. Zechariah writes, verse 2 of Zechariah 8, I will be jealous for Zion with great jealousy and with great rage. I will be jealous for her. This is what Yahweh has said. I will return to Zion and reside in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem will certainly be called the city of trueness and the mountain of Yahweh of armies, the holy mountain. This is what Jehovah of armies has said. There will yet sit old men and old women in the public squares of Jerusalem, each one also with his staff in his hand because of the abundance of his days. And the public squares of the city themselves will be filled with boys and girls playing in her public squares. This is what Yahweh of armies has said, although it should seem too difficult in the eyes of the remaining ones of this people in those days. Should it seem too difficult also in my eyes, is the utterance of Yahweh of armies? This is what Yahweh of armies has said. Here I am saving my people from the land of the sunrise and from the land of the setting of the sun. And I shall certainly bring them in, and they must reside in the midst of Jerusalem, and they must become my people, and I myself shall become their God in trueness and in righteousness. This is what Jehovah of armies has said. Let the hands of you people be strong, you who are hearing in these days these words. From the mouth of the prophets on the day on which the foundation of the house of Jehovah of armies was laid, for the temple to be built. For before those days there were no wages for mankind made to exist. And as for the wages of domestic animals, there was no such thing. And to the one going out and to the one coming in, there was no peace because of the adversary, as I kept thrusting all mankind against one another. And now I shall not be as in the former days to the remaining ones of this people, is the utterance of Jehovah of armies. For there will be the seed of peace, the vine itself will give its fruitage, and the earth itself will give its yield. And the heavens themselves will give their dew, and I shall certainly cause the remaining ones of this people to inherit all these things. And it must occur that just as you became a malediction among the nations, O house of Judah and house of Israel, so I shall save you, and you must become a blessing. Do not be afraid. May your hands be strong, for this is what Jehovah of armies has said. Just as I had in mind to do what was calamitous to you people because of your forefathers making me indignant, Jehovah of armies has said, and I felt no regret, so I will again have in mind in these days to deal well with Jerusalem and with the house of Judah. Do not be afraid. These are the things that you people should do. Speak truthfully with one another, with truth and the judgment of peace. Do your judging in your gates and calamity to one another. Do not you scheme up in your hearts, and do not love any false oath. For these are all the things that I have hated, is the utterance of Jehovah. And the word of Jehovah of armies continued to occur to me, saying, this is what Jehovah of armies has said. The fast of the fourth month, and the fast of the fifth month, and the fast of the seventh month, and the fast of the tenth month will become for the house of Judah in an exaltation, and a rejoicing, and good festal seasons. So love truth and peace. This is what Jehovah of armies has said. It will yet be that peoples and the inhabitants of many cities will come, and the inhabitants of one city will certainly go to those of another, saying, let us earnestly go to soften the face of Yahweh and to seek Yahweh of armies. I myself will also go, and many peoples and mighty nations will actually come to seek Yahweh of armies in Jerusalem and to soften the face of Yahweh. This is what Yahweh of armies has said. It will be in those days that 10 men out of all the languages of the nations will take hold. Yes, they will actually take hold of the skirt of a man who is a Jew, saying, we will go with you people, for we have heard that God is with you people. That concludes our study for today. That ends Zechariah chapter 8 and concludes our video also for today. The time is... well, the date, first of all, is April 18th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1611 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Got a couple of seconds here, but we're pretty well done. I've just got a few more seconds than normal. So it's good. I think I want to say I love you very much, obviously. But I want to say also that the essential nature of vitamins means that we need to get all these different vitamins, right? So the problem with studying one vitamin is you've got to exclude the other vitamins somehow, and that's unethical because it prevents people getting their health. That was the reason for that. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.